Okay, can you guys hear me all right? Good. Good morning. Thank you guys for being here. I know I usually don't come to my conferences on time. I'm always like 5-10 minutes late, so I'm sure there's going to be some folks that will join us. So please take some time and just see if you can silence your phone, please. If you can turn them off, that's good too. But, you know, out of respect for all of us here, so I hate when my phone just goes off in the meeting. You know how that feels. So. Also, there are CEU sign-up sheets in the back of the room, and I'm told that, you know, the QR codes there also work as well. You can scan and sign up if you want to. And then we will also distribute exit surveys at the end of the workshop. Okay. And please, I want you guys to know we have some people here that also need interpretation, so we have some interpreters here. I have a lot of slides. I'm gonna try to pace myself. Just so the interpreters can be able to, you know, get that across. But this class is about overcoming entry barriers for emerging farmers. My name is Vitalis Chita, and I will be facilitating because all of us are going to be presenting today. This is going to be a conversational type class. So please, I will encourage that you join me in making sure that we can present this class. Here's my beautiful family. I come from Buffalo, Minnesota, and I have 5 beautiful kids, my beautiful wife, Janet, 4 boys, and my princess there in the middle. So, and that is my Better Greens team. Yeah. So Better Greens, we started Better Greens in 2007, informally, okay? And it was born out of the sheer desire of wanting to eat my African vegetables. You know, I grew up in Africa. I just came here in the early 2000s. And so the nostalgic feeling of eating jamanjama, managu, and chinsaga, and all of this, I couldn't help it. But we couldn't find them in the state of Minnesota where we lived. So that's where my desire for farming started. So we started doing something in our backyard, and that got out to about 1/4 acre. We started sharing with friends and family, and then the whole community just caved in. It's just like, I want some. Yeah, so that kind of birthed Better Greens. So we saw that as an opportunity, but also we thought that this community really need this resource. So we wanted to step out and make that happen for them. So we grow mainly ethnic African vegetables. That's what Better Greens do. So in 2016, we formalized Better Greens, and we're serving communities of African immigrants in Minnesota and beyond. We have folks that will drive all the way from neighboring states in the summer, and they'll come to our farms. 90% of what we grow is sold right on the farm, because that's how sought after these things are, you know. And there are very few of us that do grow them in the state of Minnesota. There's some coming up now. You know, through the inspiration of Better Greens, we've been able to encourage others to join in because we cannot supply the whole market. So. But we had our own share of challenges, which is why we're here today to talk about it, right? We've tried to kind of get into the mainstream agriculture. And again, we started this in 2007, formalized in 2016. And here we are, 2024. And I still feel like I'm just beginning, right? Because the challenges are still right there. So we're going to talk about that today. I want to also talk about an organization that I'm a part of. And we're going to also mention this later on when we're talking about some of the strategy to overcome these barriers. is we founded the Minnesota African Immigrant Farmers Association. I'm the president of that association. So that was founded last year. We're very early and very young in this. But it was born out of the sheer need of the challenges that we individually face as farmers. As we all know, the emerging farmer community has just kind of exploded in the last couple of years. Since COVID, there's been this increased desire for us to grow our own food, for us to grow food that are culturally relevant to us, and for us to be able to, you know, eat food that we think is grown healthy, is being tended carefully, and food that we think really kind of meet our dietary needs. And so the commercialization that has kind of taken over, you know, most folks are questioning that and they're coming back to their roots. They're looking at their neighbors who are farmers, who don't gardens in their backyards. Those are the people to reach out to. And they say, hey, I'll pay you $5 to get a bunch of greens because I saw you grow them. I saw how you took care of them. I saw the manure that you put there. And I know that this is done right. And that's what I want. And I think that's the feeling that's going on in our community. So our mission as the association is to unite and represent the interests of African immigrant farmers throughout the state of Minnesota. So I'm the president of that association, as I said. But again, there are other associations that exist in other communities. The reason why this association came to be was because of our unique challenges in trying to gain entry into the agricultural sector. We come from Africa, and we carry with us a huge cultural influence, you know, a lot of language barriers that we're going to look at here, a lot of differences. But then when we go out to look for solutions to some of our challenges that we all face as emerging farmers, we all get put in this one bucket, right? Excuse me. And in that one bucket, it's almost like it's one size fit all. So we go to these meetings, to these conferences, to all these trainings and everything else, and we get fed something that's been customized for a group of people that really we do not really fit in accurately. So we go sit there and we come out, and the presenters might think that we got something out of it, but we did not. Because probably we did not understand the lingo that was used there. We had probably had questions that were culturally inclined to us. There's certain doubts that we needed to clarify, but in that big bucket, we find it difficult to be able to ask those questions to get clarity so we can be able to get value out of what was presented. So that's what this was born, is aggregating our little resources that we can come up with as individuals, but also aggregating our efforts to be able to look for solutions that could really address these issues that we're facing. So we're going to be having a very interactive session here, especially when it comes to sharing our experiences. I was speaking with somebody at breakfast this morning. It's like, what, there's really no solution to all these challenges. Well, there might be some efforts that are going out there, but still within those efforts, we have challenges. So I think it's through sharing our experiences. I think it's through sharing how you overcome some of the barriers that we're probably going to talk about here today with every one of us that I think we can begin now to forge a way forward. Some of us might walk out of here today and think, oh, from his experience or our experience, I can now go back and be able to solve my own challenge because I have the same problem. So we can learn from each other, you know, in that way. We can comfort each other by, you know, whining about the same problems that we don't have a solution about, right? I think that's good therapy for all of us, right? But sharing is very important in this thing, because we found that in our association, because when we get there, we just get into it. And in that moment, the light bulbs start coming up, right? So I hope that we can be able to experience that here today. So at the end of it, we tell our stories. Some of you might have success stories here and other things that could help us. Some of you have probably gone past that stage of emerging. You are now, you know, running a very successful farm business. We want to hear that. We want to learn from you, please. So why these challenges is because of cultural differences. Now, I want you guys to understand that I am zeroing this down to a specific, I'm going to be talking more about the African community because that's where I come from. And those are the challenges that I'm really more related to and have experienced, right? I know we're a community of emerging farmers. We all have challenges. But to make this make sense, I want to just use this as a reference. I know that all of those is going to overlap with what you guys are also facing in your own field. But I just want you guys to kind of have that in context as we have our conversations. So cultural difference is one of those. Like, we have in our community farmers that just come here about a few years ago, right? And they want to do farming. We have a huge community of East African farmers within the African immigrant farmers community. And some of them have a lot of challenges from language, from culture, from even understanding how the process and the system of agriculture works here, from understanding some basic tools and farm practices that, you know, we use here and we probably take for granted every day, assuming that everybody knows, but they don't. Yeah, they're coming from a culture that use very rudimentary and mundane tools and methods of farming. And when they come here, they don't have access to those kind of things. So the culture is preventing them from getting access. Where do they go? That is a challenge that they're facing. Language barriers that I mentioned about. Some of them are still having legal issues to be able to gain, you know, legal rights to be resident or live in this country and work freely, right? So some of them are still in that process. But they have to survive, and I think farming is one of those things that they can get into it. So there's a lot of fears, as we know, surrounding that. Coming out, they might not even be able to come to these conferences because, like, oh, somebody might think I don't have papers or something, I might get into legal trouble. So they're having all these challenges. But in our community, we see them every day. We talk to them. We interact with them. They're here. They want to farm. But to go out and get experience and training and be able to talk to somebody that can help them in their challenges, they're taking steps back, right? So that is a barrier. They're scared. So limited access to custom resources, like I talk about. How about we come to this, some of these conferences and be more intentional about who's attending? Instead of having this one-size-fits-all approach, how about we put in place some tools that can be able to make sure that the information and the training and the resources that we're trying to get out there actually gets to those that need them and meets them where they are, right? Because even though we're all facing all these challenges, we are all at different levels. So how about we put that into the trainings and the different things that we're doing to address some of these challenges and barriers? Cultural adjustments. That speaks for itself. But now, look at this. We have the big boys in town, right? The big farmers. Yes. They are there, you go everywhere, their presence is felt, literally. And they dominate the affordability of land. Well, I don't know. I don't know if LSP in the house, but you know the fight for small farmers like me to get access to land. It's a challenge. You can't, it's daunting, it's a process. I mean, the tools, you tell me the tools and resources out there with the USDA, MDA, the grants, the all kinds of stuff. But from my perspective, if you look and read the language of all of those things, they're limiting to people like me. They're ruling us out. And the reason is simple, because when that was crafted, they were not crafted with folks like me in that picture, right? But we're coming into scene now, and they're regurgitating this same information, this same language, and rolling out all these loan programs, and they're cutting us out, right? And they don't even know, but they're cutting us out. Land cannot be accessed. You go to the market, You cannot even compete with the prices. You know, we practice regenerative agriculture practices. That takes time. That takes energy. That takes meticulous, you know, things that you need to do to make sure that you grow right, that you treat the land right, that you put what is needed into that plant and grow it right so you can be able to feed people confidently, knowing that they're eating something is good for their bodies. But how can you compete with that price out there when you put so much inside and your prices are maybe 2-3 times that of the big guys, right? You can't keep up. You go to the market, you can't sell your organic tomatoes because they got the other stuff out there that is you can get it for nothing, literally. So that's a challenge for us. How do we carve out a market space that we can be able to make profit for what we're doing? You even talk about political influence. Now, in Minnesota, I had a chance to go with Nikki. Nikki's here from the Good Acre. It was opening day at the Capitol, right? Boy, as soon as we walked in there, you know, there was these guys in suit and ties, and they're representing these big guys, right? They're walking, going into all of these offices and everything. They're wielding their political influence and power and being able to influence, you know, the issues that are facing us. And when we go there as small guys, you know, these guys are going to influence the market and the community. We're talking in hundreds of millions of dollars. We're going there for, what, $200, $250 for money that can come into the community and help us as small farmers to be able to grow and sell our crops? Who are they going to listen to more? So you see that influence. The market price, like I talked about, you know, so access to land resources is something that is really like number one. When you come in our community and you survey and say, what is the number one challenge for us as a farmer to farm right now is access to land. In our association, we have, since December, we have about 15 new entry-level farmers that have come in, say, oh, I want to farm. Where can I get land? They can't even have land because you can't find it. Right now, even when you find one, it is too expensive. And right now, we're talking leasing, not even buying. We're talking leasing land. Now, I live in Wright County in Minnesota. If you look it up, the average land land cost for rent per acre is about maybe close to $200 at this point. It was 160 something the last time I checked, right? That was about a year ago. But we're leasing an acre of land as small farmers in Wright County for $500. That's 1 acre of land, $500. And for somebody who was just coming in, that is a huge expense. Okay, yeah. 200 to 500. Exactly. But when you go, like now, when you go to the big farmers, okay, that's normal for small guys like us. You come to rate 5 acres, 10 acres, you might, you know, get it for that price. That's what they're going for. It's like, oh, you want it? The competition is high because if you don't take it for that 500, somebody else is going to take it, and we need the land. So you see how that competition drives the prices. But now, if I come as a commercial farmer and I want to lease 100, you know, I pay about 150, you know, maximum 200 an acre. So that's, you know, that's what we're talking about here. But how do we make it affordable for these guys? Because not everybody is going to be able to have that $500 lying around, right? They're trying to get into that sector. And you have to be able to, you know, create an environment where they can be able to get in and get some traction. He's only shelling $500 for rent, and he's going to be shelling more money because, again, drought, irrigation, all of this stuff that comes with it, right? And at the end of the day, they're seeing it, man, this is too expensive. I can't do it. But we want to encourage these people because they bring into our ecosystem something that we've been missing for so many years. That's the critical thing here. It is not about who's doing business. It's about who's bringing what to the table and what's the value of that to our community. That's what we're talking about here. The land programs, like I talk about, you go to USDA, now they have all these programs, right? And first thing, actually, I went to USDA, I want a loan for land. Actually, I wanted to put up a greenhouse. But then there are land programs as well. You know, they're asking collateral. Not many folks in our community is going to be able to come up with the kind of collateral that they're looking for, right? So again, that was a program that was built over time, a long time ago, with folks in mind that were not the folks that we have in our ecosystem of emerging farmers today, right? Most of those folks cannot afford that. How can we rewrite that language and make those policies more accessible? So we do collaborative land sharing initiatives. You know, that's something we do in our community, but still that comes with its own sets of challenges. I'm not gonna go into that right now. Access to market and labor force. I don't know where you guys get your labor from, but I can't find any. And if you find one, they're gonna price you through the roof, you know? And I was glad to meet some guys around down there at the booth. They're having this program where they can provide you seasonal workers. I thought that's pretty cool. No, that's really nice. If you can have an agency like that that can come alongside and say, hey, we're gonna source these workers, these seasonal workers, they're gonna come, we're gonna work with you and get them to your farm. You can have them for, you know, a couple of months, you can have them for these days a week, and they're very flexible, and I thought that's pretty cool. But again, the devil is in the details, right? Because we don't really know the whole cost of that. When that starts coming out, then that might, again, present some other challenges for people like us. But at least there's something like that that's coming up. I thought that was pretty cool to see that yesterday. So discrimination bias, language barriers in the marketplace, we see that every day, every single day. Last year, we were trying to access a farmer's market in Minnesota, and we thought this was gonna be, the community was very supportive of this, right? It's like, yeah, you guys can come in here. We've never had a farmer's market. And then we brought our stuff there the first day, we started selling, and then in the middle of it, they came and just chased us all out. Yeah, they chased us out. I'm not gonna go into details of it, but it has all this connotation of bias and discrimination around it, right? Because we were all these African immigrant farmers in this neighborhood, and it was a beautiful thing, but you know, people could just take the power of the law and be able to do whatever you want, and there's really nothing you can do about that. So, but those are things that we face out there every day in our experiences as farmers. You know, labor force is expensive. You know, we don't even have the incentive to attract them. So hopefully those guys that are down in the booth could be our solution, right, and bring out some folks. All of us, I think we do need that. Every summer, I need at least 3 people to help me out. And my family, like I said, is my biggest workforce. That's what we do and keep it going. Okay. So why is it important to address this problem? We all know it, you know. I'm not gonna sing to the choir here again. We have to promote equity and inclusion, support local and regional economic growth. We can see the value of that coming into our communities. If I start employing people, that's value into the community, right? If I start selling my products, that's taxes that go back into the community. You see, and again, I'm also contributing towards health and well-being of my community members, because now they're eating healthy, nutritive vegetables, right? Versus some of the stuff that we know is not really healthy out there. That is what we do in terms of bringing value to the community. Food security, there are food deserts. And last year, like I said, my specialty as Better Greens is I farm ethnic African vegetables. We have in some of the areas, especially in Minnesota, that we call food deserts, there are huge pockets of African immigrants living in those areas. And those folks access the food shelves and the different food banks that we have in those areas, right? And guess what? When they go there, and I've experienced it, I went there to just kind of try and see how it is. You know, we cherry pick what they have, because you go, they have kale, they have all these different, you know, what we normally know as vegetables out there. They're not seeing the vegetables that they love to eat, that they desire and they thirst for. And so we enhance that by being able to grow our food and make sure that they become into those food deserts, right? And I think I would like to mention the Good Acre here, because they're really doing a fabulous job in making sure that they work with farmers like us and taking that food in some of those areas. And we've been pushing for more ethnic African vegetables to be part of what they take from us, because we have our folks out there that are really gonna be needing those food items. So we wanna start that trend and hope that, you know, the rest will follow. And that even not just us, but that all of you as emerging farmers can start looking into some of these areas and some of the food items and the crops that we grow and say, hey, what can I grow? Because I live in an area that also serves this population. And together we begin to address that program holistically. Our cultural heritage is so important to us. If you look at the African culture, especially for me, in the way I grow, in the way I remember my culture, everything is centered around food and farming. So it's that important for us. And even at Better Greens, we have these summer rituals, right? I want to call them rituals, but these are activities that we usually do on the farm when we're back home. So we're incorporating that here, and we're inviting the community to be a part of that, right? For example, we do what we call the corn roasting festival, which on the farm. We do that in the month of August and September, where people come on the farm and we have a bonfire in the evening, and we roast corn and we tell stories of back in those days, right? Those kinds of things. And then we also have encouraged people to come out, and we have all the rudimentary tools and different things that we used to use in farming back in Africa, and people can come out and take a day, an hour or two, you come with your family, we give a space for you, experiment that, you know? Go back in time. And then when they start doing that, they tell us stories of when they used to grow up with their siblings, with their grandmas, all of these things start coming back to them. So that's what farming really brings to us. So it's very important for preserving our cultural heritage, and that's why we do it. We foster social cohesion, and we also ensure environmental sustainability because we are really, really serious about regenerative agriculture because that's what we practice back home. We're bringing that here because we know that's what will save our land and keep it growing food for the next generation. Okay? So we also have financial barriers. You know, we have limited access to capital, high startup costs, grant loans, financial assistance. We know the challenges that come with that. Traditional farming methods, I talked about that. There are different crop selection and diversity. And even a challenge for me, because I was just having a conversation with somebody this morning. He asked me, how do you bring your seeds over here? I said, well, last week, the border guys at the customs in Minneapolis, they tossed away about $600 worth of seeds that was importing from Africa, right? So I went through all the regulations back in from where that's coming from. The Ministry of Agriculture, we signed up. We did all the right things. We took the seeds there. They were examined. They were processed. They were, you know, everything. They were packaged right. But when they got to Minneapolis, it's like, no, we think this is invasive or whatever. Tossed away. That's my season, right? So that's some of the things that, how can we bring seeds in a way that could be able to enable us to continue to grow in a very sustainable and responsible way. You know, crop selection and diversity, social cultural impact. Government regulation is the elephant in the room. We were having, there was a session yesterday about policy and regulation. I know maybe some of you were in that session yesterday. It was very interesting. But it's amazing to see how many regulations are out there, and some of them so out of this world. Like the policy of you need to get a license or certification to get your animals transported on the road to your next farm. And then the spotty regulations where it's almost like regulators go around and just kind of cherry pick who they want to regulate, right? It's really something, but this is how regulation really kind of influences us. I'm going to pause here. I think maybe you have something. Did you have your hand up, sir? No, I think. Okay, sorry. Do you have? Okay, all right. No problem. Thank you. So, the regulation, obviously, as we know, is very complex. The process is daunting for some of us because, you know, we cannot interpret it. We cannot understand it. And there are really no resources out there that could more or less, you know, handhold some of our farmers in the community to be able to walk them through that process, right? So it's that complexity that they bring the very expensive compliance cost, you know, to get some of those certifications, sit through some of those classes. They don't come free. You have to pay for them, right? Market access restrictions. Now you have to, you know, go through a gimmick process just to be able to sell at the farmer's market. So the farmer's market themselves have their own regulations. But even though, depending on what you're selling and how you grow and process it, you still need regulations from the state or federal, whatever, all of this host of regulations, right? And that's really limiting some of us to to be able to do the bureaucratic red tape. Ongoing possible solutions. We have support from community organizations. You know, the Good Acre has been very supportive. I think Marble Seed has been one of those go-to places that for farmers in our community, we've always looked forward to it every year, right? Because it's a world of resource here. I mean, even this, what we're doing right now, I can't wait till next year so I can sit in other conferences and workshops so I can learn something. This place is rich. That's why we encourage most of our emerging farmers, especially farmers in our community, to attend this conference. Marble Seed model is really designed around being able to address some of those challenges that we're talking about, right? But we have to dive in. And I did address this with Marble Seed last year, saying we have to be more intentional about, you know, the BIPOC community that comes here to this conference. It is that important. We cannot just have it as a label, but we have to focus in finding out what are some of the specific challenges that they have and make sure that this conference can address that. I think it just brings more value, right? We have the framework. We just have to be able to plug in and dive in into the things that people can go back and feeling like, okay, you know what? I'm well loaded because I have a wealth of knowledge and experience from this place, right? So Marble Seed is one of those, and we have LSP, you know, they're very, very instrumental. There is Land Stewardship, the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, right? That's one that I think is very important if you're coming from that area. And there's also Wisconsin Farmers Union. They are doing a fabulous job in trying to, you know, support emerging farmers and come alongside in helping us with some of these challenges. So those are places that we can go. And I know there are many more out there, right? There are very many more out there. So mentorship programs are so key. There's so many farmers, like in our community, that are looking for some farmer that probably is one of you guys sitting in here that has had more experience. I'm not saying you're free of the challenges, but you have more experience that you can be able to hold somebody's hand and say, hey, this is how far I have come, and this is how I can be able to help in some of your baby steps, right? We need that. We need that mentorship. We need people to pair up, you know, in areas that are similarities, and they can be able to learn from each other. We need access to the market, right? We need to build relationship with our customers. And then we also the peer groups and co-ops, like what we just started last year. The Minnesota African Farmers Association is something that I think could be a model that becomes repetitive in other communities of African migrants that are looking to farm, even in other communities that are not from Africa, right? Like we have the Hmong community, we have the Hispanic community, we have the Somali community, you name it. But I think that in order to address some of these challenges that we're running to the legislature, we're running to this organization, to that, we need to first of all aggregate our effort, aggregate who we are, come together, and be able to customize something that will make a greater impact when we reach out. But when we go as individuals, you know, we get this little impact, and sometimes they don't listen to us. But when we come together and say, hey, instead of you trying to address our problems individually, it's a one-stop shop right here. I think it makes it easier even for the folks that are even trying to help us better, right? So forming those co-ops and being part of that is great. And I know there are many of them that already exist in your communities and you are part of, right? So I wanted to talk about this organization, Four Access Partners. It's an offshoot of General Mills. It's run by retired employees of General Mills. They're based out in Minneapolis, right? But they are really key. They work around food and food processing, and they're really keen in coming along farmers and helping them, providing resources and training and even one-on-one business development, right, in those cases. So that's an organization, and I know there are many others out there that I'm not familiar with. We do a lot of networking and community building. Facilitate network opportunities, mentorship. We need to get together, even in social settings, right? And just have fun and talk about farm. We don't have that in our community, and think that's something that we need to kind of talk about. Market access, market support. We already talked about that. Training and capacity building. Again, they need to be customized. It cannot be one size fit all. We cannot just put all of us in this one bucket thinking that we have the same challenges. In principle, we might, but when you start, you know, going down the lane, you realize that, you know, they're somehow separate and need to be addressed separately. technical assistance, mentorship programs that help immigrant farmers adopt sustainable farming practices. That's very key for us. Okay, policy advocacy. That's me with Senator Portman, Minnesota Senate. That was about 2 weeks ago. Like I said, I was roaming the halls in the Capitol, seeing the big guys, but I also had a chance to have a great conversation with him, putting the word out for the need to be able to address some of these challenges in our community. So these collaborations are great, right? But again, just speaking to him is not good enough. I learned. I thought you can go and speak to one of these senators and they just go in there and say, hey, we got to do this. It's a whole process. It's a process and one that I'm still learning, and I really want to be a part of it. But it's really good to start building those blocks, But those relationships are very key, even with understanding who represents us in which community we come from. That's something that we are now educating our farmers to make sure that you know who your representative is so you can be able to call them, and that means something, But we didn't know that. We thought, call them, what are you going to do? But it's important. So language and cultural support. I'm amazed to see all the interpreters here. This is awesome. I love that, I want to see that also for maybe folks in our community, because there's some folks that don't even come to these conferences because they can't even understand what is being said, right? So it's something that maybe I can put a word in for my city and say, hey, the other folks here, how can we accommodate them, right? And be more intentional in going out and asking for that. And using the right channels could get the resources to the right people. Educational materials is very important, the translation of that. There was a team down there in one of the booths that's really doing that, and I think that's wonderful. I know that most organizations now are really pushing towards trying to get their materials to be translated in the language of the populations that they do represent. I think that's really cool. We can expand that and push it further. So now it's time for me to stop talking. I want to hear your stories. I want to hear your challenges. I want to hear your experiences and share with us how you overcame them, right? Do you identify with some of these things that I have been singing here about? Or do you just have a comment, something to say about this? Or maybe shed more light in something that I said. Probably didn't say it right. I'm not perfect. I just went out and researched these things. I think that will help all of us. Anybody? Any questions?
Where's your farm?
My farm is in Buffalo, Minnesota. Buffalo. Yes. Yes, Minnesota. That's about 25 miles west of the Twin Cities. Yes, Wright County. Yeah. That's Wright County. I've looked at other areas. Yes, it is. It is.
10,000 an acre.
Yep. I've gone to Stearns County, as well as far as St. Cloud and stuff. So, but I wanted to, I'm looking for a spot in central Minnesota. That's my area of focus. Yeah. Better soil. Better soil and also access. Yeah. And also I think because at the pricing also. No, the price of it is not as expensive as other. And then I don't need to go too far out too, from where I live. I don't, you got it.
Consider.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yes. Absolutely, absolutely. They represent that entity that could really be that channel, right? And soft. I've not seen a lot of reports and maybe action items that have come out of that group into the farming community and say, okay, this is what we're doing. This is what is lined up, right? Maybe there is in writing somewhere, but I think they probably have to do a better job in communicating that. And I know recently they just had the office of the emerging farmers and the first director, and so expanding that whole sector, right? But we still have to, you know, we're waiting for that impact. I know they're working on some stuff. We're waiting for that impact to kind of trickle down to us so we can begin to see that. But while we wait, we got to start talking about these things, you know. And we have some of them that are part of our association of the African immigrant farmers. So they know, they hear our complaints and challenges every day, and they're part of it. So, yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, we've thought about that, and we have established relationship with the University of Minnesota, but that's still a process, right? So at least maybe that's a light at the end of the tunnel, that someday we can be able to establish a well-recognized channel where we can be able to funnel the seeds from African motherland to here, right? But I had to get my season this year going. So yeah, absolutely. But then, you know, there's a process spelled out. Like, you follow these steps, you can bring your, and that's what I did, but still it didn't work. So that's the challenge. Yes. Yeah, there's no source in the U.S. I just got to do something else. Yeah, I've thought about that, you know. Yes. Yes, and that's the part of the ongoing conversation, even with Minnesota, University of Minnesota Extension, to see how we can partner together and experiment on this and grow seeds, right? But the challenge is we're talking about tropical crops. And these crops are used to an environment where they take their sweet time because they have all the sunlight to enjoy until the time they start flowering and make seeds. We don't have that luxury in Minnesota, right? So that's the challenge. But again, we start thinking about, okay, how can we extend the season by creating an environment where those seeds can grow and then we can be able to harvest them. But that, again, is still a long process, but again, those are the conversations that we're having. Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah.
I had a really similar question. I was wondering about, like, if there could be, like, a cooperative of seed growers for Africa.
Yeah. Yep. Yes.
If we could figure out how to overcome those barriers, season barriers to growth.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, yeah, that's the conversation that's going on. And I know it's going to happen someday with the excitement that it's still a groundswell right now about, you know, African culture or vegetables coming into the scene. And I know it's going to hit mainstream not too long from now. And then I think that will help to, you know, escalate that whole process, you're getting some seeds, yeah. Yes. Any other questions? Yes.
Do you have issues with zoning? Like, I'm thinking about, like, equip loans and stuff like that for high tunnels. I'm on an incubator farm, so I can't put up tunnels. Are you able to put tunnels on your location?
Yes. I haven't put them, but I can do that. Yes, the zoning permits me to do that. Yeah.
Like,
so.
NRCS, I know in Wisconsin, especially southeastern Wisconsin, NRCS is really itching to connect with urban growers.
Yeah.
So they got money that's burning in their pockets to help us to build tunnels and stuff like that. So in Minnesota, it might be different. Minnesota seems to be going forward when it comes to that. But that might be an avenue where they'll do a cost share with you to get a tunnel. And not with these cheap, rinky dink.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that might be something. I know our window closes in early May for the grant cycle, so it could be something you could possibly be able to see. But again, Minnesota's different than
might be different in different states and different laws and zoning laws apply and different things like that. But there's been a great push, especially in Minnesota, for people to gain access to those high tunnels and be able to grow more food. So it's a good thing. Yeah. I really want to hear somebody's experience about the challenges that they face when they started out and some of the techniques and different things that they use to overcome at least some of them, you know? Anybody? Don't tell me that you all started out just ready to go, right? It was all good.
So it took our family like maybe 10 years to find a farm, and it wasn't online. We had to drive around. We had to write letters.
Can you write to the board?
Sure.
Thank you.
It took our family. It wasn't there. You know what I mean? It wasn't online, it wasn't on some of these web pages.
Yeah.
You really had to just drive around and make like some community connections.
So was this,
it was a different channel.
Yeah. So now challenge in finding the land that you really wanted, right?
Yeah, anyway.
But when you it wasn't available, land availability. But when you found it finally, how was that process? Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
You have to have a good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get a good loan. I mean, that's like anywhere.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to give it to us.
Sure.
You had to have a good job. And otherwise, you weren't buying it. I mean, just like any house.
Yeah. Okay. We had folks that have totally different experience with when they actually found one. And how the process went, right? It wasn't about being able to find or having a job. Just people have good paying jobs, but they needed something more than just a job or something, you know. So there's a whole host of different challenges that they come with that. So yeah, they have maybe. Let me put it this way. They have a different set of criteria of what kind of collateral that they wanted. Yeah. So, any other experiences to share? Wow, you guys are good. So, you started out just, you need to tell me your secrets, man. I'm still struggling. Go ahead, sir. All right. Hopefully a solution comes through, but we're trying to just get our folks get used to the whole farmers market process and, different things. The thing is they don't tell you until you get there and you start discovering all of this stuff. Yeah. So. Yes, sir. It is.
It's tough, and it's more than financial consideration that has to be thought about. I know for some that's not something that has to be thought about, but for the rest of us, safety is a thing.
So do you think that's what's probably still keeping you as part of that incubator? you think you're probably at a point where you probably should have maybe moved out and be on your own, and you know, but you okay. It's good. All right. How much time do we have left?
We're at 9:50.
Oh, we got 20 minutes. Yes. That's an experience that happened to me 3 years ago. So I'm in a new land right now, but this land I had for about 5 years, I've gotten it to a very perfect point. Like, it was just perfect, grown everything that we wanted. And then the landlord comes in and just pours the block, right? And there's really nothing you can do. You just got to pack up and leave and go somewhere else, right? So that hit me in the gut, you know? And then since then, I've been really, really trying to work to see how I can be able to get and own my own piece of land. And the reason for my search all around the county. So that's what we have, right? But there's got to be some, what we're saying, I mean, the idea that land is scarce and it's hard to find, that's pretty much across the board, right? But it is even more so for minority farmers. That's just a fact. And here we are screaming and say, what are some avenues, what are some opportunities or different programs and things that you can carve out to create pathways? Okay, we're not saying you go out and start dishing out land to folks, but how can you make it more easier for them to be able to start somewhere, right? Build that capital, build that foundation. Now they can be able to, you know, access more things on their own. You just got to be able to give people some cushion, somewhere to start. I think that's the ask here. Yes, ma'am. So there's that gap in between, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's tough to cross that gap to go on the other side, right? So that's, yeah.
There is, most people have upwards of 500,000 acres, and that's in no way affordable to anybody.
And they don't want to sell you 20 acres. They want you to buy all 500 of it, right?
Yeah.
And that's some of the issues that we run into, you know. Sometimes you do find land, but it's like, I have 200 acres. I can't just sell you 50. No. You know, so it becomes tough because we don't have the capacity to even if I have the money, what am I going to do with 200 acres? I don't need it. I need 20 acres. That's good enough for me. How can I find that? And I think that's one of the challenges, again, in trying to find land, is to find land the size that you really do need. You know, you find people that either have no land or they have a lot of land. And so that kind of puts us out of the game. And then, you know, the big players can come in and have a buffet. So that's the challenge. How can we, I don't know if zoning laws have something to do with that, you know, that have stipulations says you can't just break up this land. Maybe the city has its zone. So I don't know, but it's a challenge. That's just a fact. Yes.
Yeah, looking into buying land, you find into that situation. When you want
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But going back to policy. Policy, guys, we all need to go to Washington, D.C., beating the drums, like, hey, we got to change this. But again, it's, that's the other part of this, being able to overcome some of these barriers, the advocacy work, right? That, you know, I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunately, that's just part of the process. That's how our democracy works, that we have to be able to get down and dirty to get things fixed, you know? And so our responsibility as emerging farmers and people that are struggling with these things is what, actually, so what is it that you're doing to be able to change that, right? How are you being part of the policy advocacy? And I know they do exist everywhere. What part of group are you working with? How are you supporting them so they can be able to go out and champion some of these causes that are very near and dear to our hearts, right? So I think that's where I think us farmers are failing, because we do not really step up to the plate and be part of that. We just expect that somehow somebody should go out and do it, right? And to some extent, some of us think that we really have nothing to give to it. No, we all do. We all seriously do. You know, show up at the Capitol, call your congressperson or senator or whoever it is that is representing you. I didn't know this from the get-go as an immigrant. I didn't know some of these things. I had to learn them the hard way. I had to learn them in experience and through the process, that these things do really matter, and this is how you change things for the better. And that call is important, that we do share that amongst our farmer groups and say, hey, come on, there's something happening at the Capitol. It's representing us. Let's show up. That's how we push these policies, right? So we're coming back again to policies. Even at the city council level, we still have to be able to show up at those town hall meetings, at those city council meetings, and be able to have a voice. Is that important? Yes. There's a microphone. So.
A challenge that I'm seeing amongst emerging farmers is understanding the business part of agriculture. Like, a lot of people have the technical knowledge, but when it comes to identifying what market channels is sustainable for their business over the course of time, people struggle with that. And sometimes they end up having to change their business structure. Mm-hmm. From nonprofit and like stop relying on grants and things like that, and really ramp it up, or like take a deep dive and making it a profitable business and looking at how different market channels influence their revenue streams and stuff.
I think that's a critical point, because you know, income is one thing that drives farming. Like, most of our emerging farmers in our community, they want to be able to see that what they're growing can be able to bring in some income, whatever that is, right? But again, to be able to be at scale that you could say, oh, I'm running a profitable farming operation, that's a whole different ballgame. And I know there are people here that have experiences that, you know, it takes a long time to be able to get to that point. And there's so many factors that are involved. You got to look at your operation. You got to look at your business structure, your strategy. You got to look at your markets and how you access them, you know, because sometimes we go to the market and we're shooting ourselves in the foot and we don't even know it. So those foundations, to be able to just understand basic business principles, and this goes the same for any business, you know, because, again, one of the cultural barriers is that farmers in our community think that they don't need to go and register a business with the state, right? Or the Secretary of State, and say, oh, I have my business registered, it's formed, I have all these legal requirements that is needed, right? Because they come from a culture where all you need to do is go to the farm, grow your crops, eat some, take some to the market, and you sell. Nobody's asking you any questions, right? Nobody's asking you for no paperwork. So they're coming from that background. That's why it's important for us to be able to, you know, figure out that educational piece at the very foundation. And I mentioned earlier here an organization called Four Access Partners, and they are coming alongside and say, this is what you need to do, and we're willing to work with you step by step along the way so you can have a foundation for your business. So in year 3, 4, 5, you should know if this is the right thing for you to do, if you should change your strategy, if you should plant different crops and different things. So they work with you in that setting, right? So we need champions like that amongst this community that I'm talking about, to be able to get them work there. Because some of us, we just think that, you know, we grow, we sell. But are we making money? That's the question they're not answering. because they might be thinking they're making money, but then when you sit down and from a business perspective, you start taking away your expenses, you start taking away all of these things that you put into the business to grow and sell, you realize that you've lost a lot of money. And when that reality hits, then some of them just probably quit, right? So that's the problem. So we want to be able to have that foundation. And I know somebody talked about the incubation farm. We do have some sort of a farm that all of us do farm there. We have 20 acres of land that is leased. It is subdivided to all these farmers based on their capacity, and we all farm together, right? And it is part of that ability to be able for us to lean on each other, and it facilitates training, it facilitates coordinating market access, and all of these foundational pieces that we need to provide to the farmers so they can grow, right? So that is a great model, like I mentioned, that we hope that could become something that becomes a vehicle that brings solutions to some of these challenges, especially within the minority community, right? So that's really a great point. Thank you. Yes?
Hi. My name is Beatrice, and I'm from Illinois. And one of the things that I would agree with you guys is that an incubator farming program has been very beneficial for me. I was in a program for 5 years, which was supposed to last only for 3 years. But as a beginning farmer, I did not have an exit strategy. I just went into the program. I learned a lot, business management, growing mushroom, beekeeping. I have a beekeeping session later today. So I learned all this stuff, and then, but when it comes to land access, that was a big challenge for me, because I had that to make that turn around and decide it's time for me to move to my own land. And when I started looking for land, there was that big challenge going through FSA. They will not accommodate me. I went through a conservation easement program. They told me I need like a gatekeeper. I need somebody tall enough to buy 20 acres on my behalf and farm under them. But my last solution was a solution that came from in me. I decided I really want land. I want to farm. And I went to Zillow and Realtor and looked for farmland in Illinois that is zoned for agriculture, A1. And I was looking for 5 acres and above. So I was able to get my land, 6 acres in a rural area. And I am trying to build my business. So this is my message to the beginning farmers in the room. There are options out there for you. And if you are busy like me, I have a full-time job, and I'm trying to get into farming. You also look out. You also have to consider that area. Like, where can I go? Where can I go? And I don't have the time to go for advocacy. And you know, I have a family. I have business. I don't have all that time. I'm really trying to focus on building my own business. And I like the idea of Minnesota, because you guys have a good network of immigrants, and also attending meetings like these ones has always been very beneficial for me. I've been coming here since 2019, and every year I learn something new. I hop from one workshop to another, trying to get all this, soak up all this knowledge that I go to apply in my area.
Thank you so much for your experience. Thank you for sharing that. I'm glad we're having some of that. So you just got to play with this. And sometimes you just got to go out and be an army or soldier for yourself. You know, you fight for your business. If you want it so bad, you're going to probably figure out a way. You know, I think that's really key to bring that to the table. It's a key ingredient for that success. You know, all these other things are going to come and help us. But, you know, you got to be able to show that you're hungry for it. Right. And yeah, I understand not everybody has time for advocacy. We are all divided. We're trying to farm, but at the same time, we're trying to survive. Because most emerging farmers, most of us do not live off of that farm income. We have full-time jobs that take care of stuff, but we so badly want to get to a point where we can just farm, right? And I think that's the driver here. So thank you for sharing that. All right. It's been a great conversation. I really appreciate it. I hope I didn't bore you out of your minds, but my experience in farming and what I'm bringing to the table is really something that I'm passionate about. I'm really, truly, for the fact that we can diversify and bring into food ecosystem something that's valuable. That's what Better Greens stands for. Better Greens is bringing something new, but it's very, very important because these vegetables, they're ethnic. They still have some sort of originality to them, which really kind of speak to the nutritional content and the health benefits. It's really the icing on the cake. And I hope that you might, you know, find that in some of your grocery stores sometime in the near future. But that is my goal. Because guess what? I go to the grocery store in my neighborhood, I shop, and then I have to go look for a specialty store somewhere that 20 miles away to shop for African vegetables, right? Or African food items. And that's not right. You know, we have already in our grocery stores aisles that are, we have the Hispanic aisle, we have aisle for this, you know, ethnic group or community. Just create one more for African, right? That's it. Let's just create one more, and we'll fit right in there, and we'll just come and shop at your store and shop our stuff. We'll be a one-stop shop. We all go home happy eating healthy vegetables, right? So I really appreciate you being here. Thank you for listening, and please, let's keep the conversation going. Thank you. Have a good day.